Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want to get a chiseled look in the jawline? Sculpt and shape your jawline with added volume from Juvederm Volux XC. Juvederm Volux XC is an injectable gel specifically designed to be robust enough to improve moderate to severe loss of jawline definition. And it is the first and only hyaluronic acid filler approved for the jawline. Add volume to your jawline for a chiseled look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello.
Before we get started with the actual episode, we had an exciting announcement we wanted to share with all of our listeners. So our 100th episode is coming up. And so to celebrate, we came up with a great idea. Mark, tell them what it is.
Well, we want you to be a part of it. And by that, we mean we want one of our listeners to be the guests and pick the movie. So how are we going to do that? Classic, old-fashioned, what is this, the 1950s elementary school student and essay contest.
That's right. Email us at twoqueens, twooldqueens@gmail.com, and let us know what movie you would like to bring to the podcast and why you think it will, you know, has a good chance of being at least in what, the top 10, maybe
top 20? Top 10, maybe like kick strictly ballroom in the teeth.
So send us an email letting us know what movie you would like to bring in and why. And we'll
pick the winner. And then you're going to be on the guest on the show, come up with a category to add to the wheel.
Which maybe become canon one day. Who knows?
Isn't it enough that you just got to be on the show, though? Seriously, how much more do you need?
Okay, we'll be honored to have you. So send us an email. And now on to the show.
One is Mark and John's the other. They're just friends. They are not lovers. It's two old queens. It's two old queens. They're just sassy, not that mean. Two old queens. It's two old queens.
Now shut up.
Hello. Welcome to Two Old Queens. I'm John Flynn.
I'm Mark Rennie.
Mark, I am so excited about our guest this week. Please let everyone know who is joining us.
He's an actor and writer. You know him from the shows Red Oaks and Mixed-ish, and he's also host of the podcast What's That From? It's Nate Smith.
Hello.
Okay, bro. It's like a big bopper almost.
No, it's not that baritone. Is it? I love every time you guys listen to the beginning of your podcast, I am reminded of that one little phrase in the opening number of Book of Mormon. There is a hello. Hello is the name of the song.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Hello. Baby. And then everybody does a twist. That's that musical, right?
Yeah. Pretty much, yeah. About the day the music died. I think that's what the Book of Mormon is.
I don't know. I've never seen it.
I've seen it twice.
I've seen it twice.
So have I. Once with you.
That's right. Wait, yeah. We did see it together.
We did see it once together. The Pantages.
Yeah. Oh, that's
fun. And then I saw it in New York. Where he had to stand in the back row, you know, it was like a standby ticket.
I got to see it in a, like one of those magic New York opportunities. Like you happen to be walking by an apartment and the doorman said, hey, you happen to, you're not looking for an apartment, are you? And there's one available and you needed one and you move in and all of a sudden it's rent controlled, that kind of situation. It was like, wow. We were gifted tickets to sit and we sat behind like Kira Sedgwick. Like, it was like crazy. How is
the closer?
Yeah. And we were like 20 rows from the front and it was free. And it was, you know, I guess at the time we're $400 or something, you know, and it was very fun.
I saw the musical, The Civil War, much Ooh. The same way, which was very, like, That's we were rough. Like, it took me, I had never really seen, like, a real Broadway musical before, so it took you a while, at first, like, first 30 minutes, you're like, these singers are amazing, but then as it goes on, like, so it must be good if it's on Broadway,
right?
You know what I mean? But then sure. as you watch it, when we saw, like, the battle scenes were just people walking in slow motion, well, like a strobe light went off. We're like, maybe this isn't good. I don't think this is good.
It's not. It wasn't good. You're
but
correct.
The performers are amazing. So it's very confusing to an out-of-towner.
It's true. It's
very tough.
When you're the spectacle goes a long way. And then at a certain point, you sometimes are like, I'm watching something that's not good.
Right?
Well, thank you for having me. When you started this podcast, I immediately asked John, when am I going to be on? And he said, listen, cis white guy, take your time. We'll take find a time. Spot for you.
94 said, episodes later, you're on. It happened.
Be in the top 100, I promise you.
Thank you.
But now not, you are here.
But not a special one, like number 100. Just no, well, forgettable 94.
You are here in our annual series now of Best Supporting Actress movies. Are you a fan of... films that have been nominated or won Best Supporting Actress? Like, do you like get a tickle from a Best Supporting Actress nominee?
I didn't until I knew you did this. And then I thought, of course they do. That is the right category. And
thank you.
I'm looking forward to talking about our supporting actress.
We'll
too,
get to it.
Because, but yes. And it was a lot of fun to look at the list of nominees over the history of the Academy Awards because they're fun and weird and lots right. of movies I hadn't heard of just because someone must have had a performance that just snuck in, you know.
Right. Yeah, the one that won for this year is like Separate Tables. I'm like, what the hell is Separate Tables?
Couldn't tell you.
No. This was an Oscar. I think it was nominated in multiple categories.
Yeah.
There is no legacy to it.
What a weird
but that'll
thing.
Happen to, like, you know, our current, like, maybe there'll be a time when people are like, what's a star what's is born
yeah. what's this Hamilton
yeah I think right. it's possible. I mean, movies are so much more accessible now, like there's so many you can right. find them, you know, so a star is born is always going to be available. 40 years from now it'll be at your fingertips if you wanted to watch it. But a lot of these movies, like, you know, The Sundowners and Elmer Gantry and The Children's Hour right. and The Roman Spring of Mrs. Stone. Like, I don't even know what, I've never heard of them. I went to film school, you know, like I understand old Hollywood is a huge part of film school, obviously.
Sure.
But I don't know any of these movies. I don't know who directed, I don't know who's in them. Half the people nominated, I'm like, I don't know who this is, you know?
Do you like the Oscars generally?
No.
Do you watch them?
I hate award shows, no.
Oh. Have you ever been to an award show?
Have I? Those like slam book and yearbook. Isn't that a thing? Like most awarded best smile, those kind of things.
Oh, like superlatives.
Superlatives, yeah.
That's what I think the Oscars should be. Like most inspired like speech or sure. monologue in a movie.
Oh, you know I would what I mean? Love like, that.
So there's no nominees, so nobody knows what's going to happen.
That's a great idea.
So no one even
idea.
Knows the categories.
It's no one even knows. It's just like if you're in a movie, show up. You know what I mean? We'll do like.
What a good idea.
Well, that's going to be a logistical nightmare. If you're in a movie, show up.
We'll get those people doing the vaccine distributions in charge.
Wouldn't it be great, though, if it was just someone we all trust? If RuPaul just ran this thing and it was just like, she just picked the moments we were moved.
Yeah,
you know, and,
right.
And
you're
awarded...
just the top 20 moments of this year's in movies.
Right. Someone who knocked it out of the park. Like, that's an award. They knocked it out of the park. And it's like, you know, the grandma from Minari.
Great. Right. You know what? I don't know what it is. You just get one of these statues. Take it home,
right?
Girl.
Who cares?
Yeah. Totally. I love that,
like,
idea.
If what's his face is Paul Haggis's Crash can win. Mm-hmm. Clearly, Oscars are meaningless and have no, you know, posterity.
Funny story about Crash.
They take it less seriously.
It was supposed to be Moonlight. I don't know.
Still.
Wow.
Yeah.
quite an Easter egg.
No, I always find that they're simply put, I'll get like a half hour in and I'll start to feel bad about myself. And I'll think, I don't want to watch this anymore.
Like, in what way?
It's both the self-congratulatory nature of it is really kind of icky feeling. And there's so Hollywood celebrity are so up their own asses. It just is hard to watch. Right,
when they talk about how important what they're doing.
Yeah,
is.
The celebration like that, and knowing the diversity of movies that don't qualify is a disappointment. And
yeah,
that said, there is something, especially in like the era we're going to talk about, where I do feel like it's notable when a movie wins an Academy Award. Like, you kind of remember performances and stuff, and you say like, yeah,
sure,
Academy Award for that. You know, like. It is a special thing.
But don't
thing.
You think there's also probably things that came out the same year, 50 years ago, that are probably great that weren't nominated?
Certainly.
You know, just definitely. Like 50 years from now, we're not going to remember. I have gone to an award show, I must say. And I was right there with you.
One?
Like, even going into it, it was like the Creative Arts Emmys. It's for like gay. And like, we're like, we're not going to win. Who cares? Like, this is stupid. Let's just go have drinks and like have a fun
right,
time.
Sure.
That was our attitude. But then you're sitting in the audience and like everyone around you is winning something. Like, you're like, we were like by the makeup people for like Drag Race and they were getting up like every like 30 right. minutes. So after a while, you're like, well, that looks like fun.
Yeah,
I want to win something. One.
Right. Winning awards is fun. Yeah.
Yeah. You're like, what the hell? But then like the ceremony was over, then you have a fun party afterwards.
That's you're describing a fun award show where there's drinks and stuff.
So.
You know, like
award, sure.
the Academy Awards especially is, aside from everything I said prior, I do also think that they're just boring. Like it's rare to feel like you're getting a great evening of entertainment.
Like,
yeah. I mean, the Tonys is an exception because they'll like pushed that, you know, you're getting all these performances.
You're all these musical
stuff.
Performances
yeah.
that you're seeing.
And
it'd be fun if they had to like reenact scenes from the movies, like live on stage.
Which is a great idea, and why don't they? Well, to that point, that's the best part of the Oscars is when you get like a montage of like, you know, somebody gets a Lifetime Achievement Award and you're like, oh, wow, they did a lot.
They did a lot of great movies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, you know.
I got to look into this Steven Spielberg.
Yes. I always think of when Peter O'Toole got a Lifetime Achievement Award, because I don't think he ever won an Academy Award.
Oh.
And he came out and he was very Peter O'Toole, like slurry and blah, 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 you know, and he gave a very classy speech. It was fun. And it was like tight and cool and also like professional in his Peter O'Toole sort of way. And I was thinking like, that's the kind of Academy Awards I like, you know, like.
Right? A little boozy, but
yes,
classy.
Right. Where you see like Kirk Douglas accepting and being like both professional and funny and a smart ass at the same time. And it's sort of like, yeah, that's kind of there. I'm cool with that Hollywood, the mythical Hollywood, you know? When it comes to the present Hollywood, and it's like you're still trying to maintain this myth that I have come to completely undermine all of my self-confidence if that myth is real. Because that means every time I walk into a casting office, I gotta have that magic thing, kid, you know, like instead of just chipping away until I book a job. I mean, it's like I can't abide by the myth anymore. It needs to be like, I just put in the time, give me a job.
If this many hours, you have to.
Yeah. Can't you see the deck I built? Look at all the graphic design I did for this deck. That took hours. I don't know Photoshop.
Speaking of odd jobs and like going through them, today
nice.
We're talking about the Oscar nominated Auntie Mame. John, what's the deal with Auntie Mame?
Mark, let me tell you the deal with Auntie Mame. It was directed by Morton DaCosta off a screenplay by Betty Comden and Adolph Green. It was based on the novel of the same name by Edward Everett Tanner III under the pseudonym Patrick Dennis, and also based on the stage play by Jerome Lawrence and Robert Irwin Lee. And it tells the story of Mame Dennis, a progressive and independent woman of the 1920s, who is left to care for her nephew Patrick after his wealthy father dies. Mr. Babcock, Patrick's assigned executor, objects to Mame's unconventional way of living and tries to force her to send Patrick to a prep school. As Mame and Patrick grow closer, Mr. Babcock threatens to separate the two if Mame does not comply with his wishes. The film stars Rosalind Russell, Forrest Tucker, Carol Brown, Roger Smith, Peggy Cass, and I guess it's Jan Hanslick. It was released on December 4th, 1958, and went on to earn $9.3 million, making it the second highest grossing film of 1958. And Bosley Crowther of the New York Times wrote, "For all its absurd exaggerations and bland inconsistencies, this picture of a tireless party giver is a highly entertaining thing to see. It was nominated for 6 Academy Awards, including Best Picture, Best Actress, and Best Supporting Actress, but unfortunately went home empty-handed that night. And in 1996, a musical version of the story, titled simply Mame, appeared on Broadway and was eventually made into a film starring Lucille Ball, but luckily we are not discussing that movie. In 2016, screenwriter Annie Mumolo told Vanity Fair that she was working on a modern-day adaptation of the novel of the film with Tilda Swinton as Mame."
Wow.
And that is the deal with Auntie Mame.
So, Nate, we asked you to pick a movie that had been nominated or won Best Supporting Actress, and you chose Auntie Mame. Why Auntie Mame?
I wanted to go with one that I had never seen, and I wanted it to be old Hollywood, so not contemporary in my lifetime, and I wanted it to be a comedy, because I was the most interested in watching one of those.
Sure.
And I know this movie and even without having seen it, and I knew the camp factor was gonna be extreme.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not like I'm not thinking about the points.
Sure. Sure. Got your eyes on the prize. So yeah. What did you think of it as your first time viewer?
I really enjoyed it. It is just a goofball farce. Is it a farce? The category romp? Is it a romp? What is
I wouldn't call it a farce, because a farce usually like builds on itself in a way that I don't think Auntie Mame does.
Okay. What is it's categorically so what is a farce?
It's like
what is
episodic,
a farce?
Almost like screwball in some way.
Sure.
Oh, yeah, screwball sounds right. A farce, like some of those early Marx Brothers things. I feel like farces, the timeline is more contained.
Okay.
Like it's usually like, tonight at the opera, this is happening and all this stuff.
Tonight like at the races.
Exactly. Is a farce.
Yeah. Exactly. Noises off.
Okay. And is a romp a thing?
I don't know if it's quite as official or technical, but this
I don't know if that's a genre. I feel like that's an experience. I don't know if that's a genre. I'm looking for something in a romp.
I certainly had a romp.
A madcap or a zany romp?
Yeah, it was one of those. I wanted to watch one of those, and I really enjoyed it. I laughed out loud a bunch of times.
Sure.
It was like a pleasure. It's really it's kind of absent of plot in a lot of ways. And
yeah,
for that reason, it just was like, oh, this is just a fun movie. It's not meant to be anything more than it is, which is basically a bunch of set pieces with an outstanding performer and lots of art direction and goofy, fun things happen. And I mean, it may as well have been like, she may as well have like tripped and fallen over. They did trip and fall over the, over the couch, several like times. Jack Tripper in Three's Company, right? You know, like it kind of was that vibe. She never looked.
You could
right
draw a line
camera,
from but Auntie Mame to Suzanne Summers.
That's right. And it, the farce line. Is that what we determined? I think it's the romp line.
The romp line.
Romp. Madcap romp.
It's a romper room.
So you liked it?
I liked it. Did you?
John? Well, let's find out. John, okay. What do you think of Auntie Mame?
I think it's a classic. I don't remember the first time I've seen it, but I've seen it several times. Definitely sections of it several times. I feel like I've seen that final scene with her and the Upsons multiple times. For some reason, it must have just been on like HBO or on TV a lot, and I just caught the end of it many times for some reason. I think it's great. I think I agree. It is. I mean, it's a little long. It's 2.5 hours. It does feel more like a sketch show. Like there are ways in which you could probably take out some of those set pieces and it would still be fine with some slight changing of things. But it's just really fun. I think, you know, Rosalyn Russell's performance is so winning. It's so compelling and delightful in so many ways. And it's obviously like the fact that Lucille Ball saw this and said, oh, I want to do this makes sense.
Totally.
Because she, even though like she has so many like great lines, she also does a lot of fun physical comedy stuff. So I think it's great. I think it's a classic. It was a delight to get to watch it again and revel in all the wonderfulness of it. How about you, Mark? What do you think of Auntie Mame?
I had seen it before, so I enjoy it. I do think it does like, it peaks really early, then it kind of dips, like the whole Georgia section like really like slows down for me. But then the end, when you get to those wasps.
Yes.
Great.
It's in many
ways. I had to think Gloria is the Oscar nominee. Not, I think Mrs. Gooch is a little one note for me personally.
All right.
I think yeah. Gloria is like the MVP, and you know what I mean, of the movie. Like, yes, Rosalind, but of the non-Rosalind Russell, like I think this waspy woman anything she said was hilarious to me.
I agree.
Mrs. Gooch was like, I get it. You're like a frumpy lady. Yeah, we got it. And like, yeah. What are you doing with this? Nothing. It's kind of one note the whole time. But it's funny, she's good, but it's not like, I guess back then that was like, oh my God, a frumpy pregnant lady. Have you ever seen anything so outrageous?
She also did it on stage and she won the Tony for it.
Right.
Well, I wasn't voting that year.
No, that, I had a feeling if I picked a comedy that it would be a tiny, tiny role that was just like shtick, which is exactly what it was. I don't know why, like it still happens occasionally where someone gets the supporting actor nod for the nominee or whatever. And their role is like, they have 11 lines in the whole movie. And it just, but it stands out, like they just steal scenes, I guess. And
what was
like,
the woman in All the President's Men who was like nominated for Best Supporting Actress? She's only in like one scene, I think.
Right.
Like she's like,
there's
maybe
a lot.
The shortest.
I mean, Judy Dench was, no, I think she was the shortest. Didn't she have like less than 8 minutes of screen time for Shakespeare in Love?
Oh, that's funny.
Is Shakespeare in Love funny?
I never saw it.
You're not missing anything. It's fine.
But
well, Nate, let's get into it. As you may or may not know, but I suspect you do, we are looking for the gayest movies ever. And we have a very complex and Byzantine scoring system in which to judge them. So we're going to go through a ton of categories. And at one point, you are going to come up with a category and it will be added to the wheel. Does that mean anything right now? No, but it'll make sense when we get to it. So this is our current top five gayest movies ever with their percentage of how gay they are. So number five, with an 86.92%, Death Becomes Her. Number four, with an 89.70%, The Apple. Number three, with an 89.81%, The Rocky Horror Picture Show. Number two, with a 92.99%, The Bride and Frankenstein. And number one, with a 94.83%, Female Trouble.
Awesome.
So if you had a guess right now, how well do you think Anti-Mame is going to do?
I think it's going to do decently, like top 20 for sure. It's no Female Trouble, you know?
No, it's not.
No, that is, you've never been more correct.
I mean, Female Trouble is like the one, is it the one with like, it's just painted backdrop flats for sets and
yes.
Oh my God. Some, yes, yeah. Loads of leopard print. That's a fun movie. It's ridiculous, but it goes. I love John Waters movies. I met him once.
Oh yeah, what was that like?
It was really fun. I tried to be funny with him, and he outfunnied me big time. And it, like, you know, when you meet a famous person, and you're like, check this out. I'm gonna charm them, and then we're gonna be best friends. And it did not work out that way. But it was like he's just so much faster than me and you know and witty and fun. He was like, he did like a talk thing and I got to shake hands with him afterwards and bullshit for a few minutes. And you know, he wore like a, I'm sure you've seen him in it, a like a big pink fluffy blazer that I say that because I feel like I've seen him photographed in it like dozens of times. And yeah, it was awesome. The talk, the funny thing was, if you've read any of his books, the talk was like just like, it was like just a truncated version of one of the books. So like, nah, all right, sure. I guess it's fun to see him tell these stories in person.
He's got to come up with new anecdotes every time.
I mean,
he should be workshopping his new ones.
I mean, I don't know. When's the last John Waters movie? I don't know if he's still doing them.
I don't think they'll let them.
They won't.
There's
let
no
them.
Money. And I think Netflix has to, if they had any gumption. He has this like Christmas, a Christmas movie called Fruitcake. He has a script for it, but apparently just no one wants to give him money to make
hard.
It.
It seems crazy. Come on, Netflix. You can do it.
We need two Knives Out.
I know, for half a,
I mean, imagine how much you can make. Dollars. You can make 50 John Waters movies.
You know, actors would love to do it. And he makes movies like, he's old school. He makes movies like two takes, move on, you know, like, and that's why his movies are the way they are. He's a Tyler Perry sort of filmmaker, like just knock it out, you know, like get it done and move on. That's what he talked about. He was like, it takes a year to write it, year to shoot it, year to promote it. And that was like the schedule. And you're, you know, while you're doing one, you're doing the next, that kind of thing. Yeah. Nice.
Efficient. All right, well, let's get into it. Our first group of categories are the canon categories. So for each of these, we're each going to give the score between 0 and 100. Then we take the average of all three of our scores. So our first category, what would you give Auntie Mame on a scale of 1, 0 to 100 in actual gay characters?
Ooh, I don't think, no one was out and gay, which was a disappointment. I thought there would be for sure in her.
Well, there are a couple ladies clad in suits.
True,
there's definitely that,
and
it's definitely like in the atmosphere. I think if somehow if it were written today,
without
the Patrick character would be gay,
probably.
Well, because the writer was, right?
And the I think the acting school teacher, naked school teacher,
yes, would, sir, sure,
would, you know,
he'd be like pans, like, you know what I mean? He's like, it's probably in a polyamorous situation.
But there weren't exactly, it was kind of, I actually thought for sure there will be at least allusions to like someone's lifestyle.
Well, it's implied because when Patrick's going through the list of words he doesn't know, one of them is heterosexual. Yeah. And who's going to say heterosexual but a gay person? You know? So I think it is implied that there are gay people.
I wrote down
a
couple of those words because I was like, I don't know what these words mean myself. And one of them was like squiffed or something. And I think it means like drunk. They're all drinking related. Like there were cocktails. Oh, there were weird like monkey feathers or something. And I was like, is that? And I was kind of hoping, I was like, are those gay allusions to something gay?
That means and, Christine. That means.
And it wasn't. They're all just like,
can't walk right.
Some cocktail or some drink or thing, gin based cocktail, you know? So there aren't a lot of gay characters. I mean, it's
maybe Mr. Loomis, the department store manager. He seemed fussy.
He had a very particular mustache.
He did. He was very thin and put together. Ito, the housekeeper.
Ito, yeah.
Possibly. We know nothing about him.
Nothing about him.
Devoted.
He likes giggling.
He did giggle quite a bit. Another character, though, that like, I mean, in the Birdcage, that character is gay, right? It's
that's true.
You know.
Absolutely.
So I'm gonna
in Rebecca just, that character is gay,
so I have to give it a number based on exclusively just on like atmosphere.
You absolutely do. This should not be a shock.
I'm gonna say 40. Well, there's
40.
No, I mean there's no actual gay characters. 25. Wow, this really is the thing.
Nate, you got to be more. You got
to
come on.
When I listen to the episodes,
get it together.
Now I understand because your face is deeply judgmental.
Thank yes. you. Fine.
He's way more intimidating than I thought.
I'm not even looking at you. I'm looking at the spreadsheet. What are you doing?
Oh, I know exactly why people second guess. Okay, let's say actual gay characters. I mean, it's.
Just listen to your gut. I always say, just listen to your gut.
I mean, my initial reaction was zero because there aren't any, but I'll give it a 10. Let's say 10 because it's for a vibe.
10.
I'm going to go because I'm sure that at all the parties, there's tons of gay people and there's sort of a gay energy to it. So I'm going to go 20.
20. Yeah, I'll go like 15. I'll go right in the middle of you guys. Giving it a 15, which is 1 point higher than The Wedding Singer.
Okay.
Not bad.
Not good.
All right, I think you're going to make up a lot of points here, though. What would you give Auntie Mame in drag queen inspiration? Could a drag queen watch this and come away with a whole book of ideas?
A few.
I mean, is she, yeah, the first every scene, right?
She walks down the stairs and her, I don't know if you noticed, her haircut was like, her bangs were like pineapple fronds. Like they were like little pointy tips.
Points.
And there was a lamp right behind her in most of the scenes that had the exact same pineapple fronds at the top of the lamp, and I was like, oh,
who inspired who?
Oh, that's so fun. Yeah, I mean, quite a few. The only, I was thinking about this category specifically while I was watching it, and I was like, show me some boobs. There just weren't a lot of like, there was no like low cut thing. There was no like,
it's a different era. It's Auntie Mame.
It wasn't that.
You want more decolletage?
It was set in the 20s, right? So perhaps not so
starts
much
in the 20s. Yeah.
But it was shot in the 50s. So I thought, you know, that we'll get some boobs in there. But it was more boas and mink stoles. And so I'm going to give it a solid 90 for drag queen.
90.
I'm actually going to go 100, not just for like the looks and the fact that it is a constant parade of crazy fun looks. The fact that she's taking ornaments off of the Christmas tree and adding them to her outfit. You know, there's that. But I think just the whole point of view of the movie of like, don't, you know, go out, be fabulous. Life is crazy. It's meant to be lived. I feel like there's something about that that's so inspiring, especially for drag queens.
Well, and Rosalind Russell's like performance as Mame is like every drag race.
Exactly. 100%.
You know, like that's like, that's the bar. Like that's where you should be headed towards.
Start at Rosalind, work your way up.
Crazy energy, yet precise. Exactly.
Well said. Mm-hmm. And she, I mean, even just, we're going to get to the entrance, but man, she broke her ankle. Did you hear that? Did you see that detail on the
walk? Read that, yes.
On her intro?
I heard that in the locker room at the gym.
This is a couple of weeks ago. She broke her ankle. I'm with you. I guess it just felt like there. The only reason I didn't give it 100 was like in one lane kind of look.
Fair.
Sure. Yeah. A lot of gowns.
Okay.
Mostly evening looks. I'm also going to give it a 100, giving it a 96.67, which is 3.33 points lower than the Apple, but 6.67 points higher than I, Tonya. Okay. Not bad. All right. Our next category, gay icons. What do you think Auntie Mame does in a gay icons?
I mean, she's not Judy Garland, but Rosalind Russell is pretty special, isn't she?
She's,
I mean,
up
she's
there,
gypsy,
I would say.
And she's...
It was nice to see her in a good movie. I would say Auntie Mame herself.
Without a doubt. I think the movie, I know the movie was on my radar as like an important comedy because of Gay Men in My Life, you know, who were like, Auntie Mame is my favorite, like, you know.
Like, I think like a gay little boy, like instead, like, no, I don't want to like, I find out I'm like, I'm adopted, I'm an orphan. And now I go live like at Hogwarts. No, I want to go live at Auntie Mame's penthouse.
Exactly.
Like that's the fantasy.
Oh my God. It's like, and her, we're going to talk about her apartment. I could talk about it all day. It was special. What's the category again? It's
gay icons.
Gay icons. I don't know, you know, the peripheral characters, I don't know their status.
Right.
Well, I mean, like Comden and Green, they weren't gay, but like they wrote a lot. They wrote Singing in the Rain. They wrote a lot of Broadway musicals. Morton DaCosta also directed Music Man. So there's like a lot of like theater energy around it, which is, you know.
But are they gay icons?
They're not. Yeah, it's not really iconic. Save that for my category to end of the week.
Okay. All right. Okay. Foreshadowing.
Okay. So gay icon. I mean, she's big enough to bump it like well past halfway. You know.
Definitely.
Sure. But if it was Judy Garland carrying that, like I would give it 100 just for her.
Right.
But I got to drop it down. I'm gonna say 85.
85.
Yeah, I'll also go 85 because it's Rosalind Russell and it's also Rosalind Russell in what I think is probably her most iconic performance.
I'm going to also do for the same reasons, but I'm going to give it 75 for that, giving an 81.67, which is the highest we've had in six movies. Okay. So that's pretty good. All right, the next category, the male gaze. Mm. How horny is the camera for the male form?
Interesting.
This one's tough. She's really attracted to middle-aged men, like she herself, middle-aged men.
She herself, Auntie Mame. Yeah.
I wonder, like, where's the hunks here, Auntie Mame, at your party?
There, she does have a type, doesn't she? Kind of like
does, yeah.
Really does have a
hulky, white guy.
None of the guys are distinguishing looking at all.
No, they're all pretty bland. I mean, the sexiest guy is probably college-aged Patrick, right?
Sure.
But we don't even in college, like you don't see him like tussle with another guy on the football, tossing a pigskin around.
Where's the tussling scene? You
know?
This is a romp. No, I was expecting like, tussling.
I thought for sure you'd see him in a tank top, like lifting some like old school iron dumbbells at some point.
One of those belts? Things you stand with a belt that
with
shakes.
A belt that shimmies. None of that. It's really not so horny for men.
It's not really a horny movie.
No,
Auntie Mame.
And even like Ito, there should have been a scene where like, you know, she calls on him in a moment when he's indisposed with his lover, and he runs out and he's in his tighty whities and a tank top, you know, and he does like a backflip over the couch to help her pick, you know. I'm rewriting this for Tilda when she does it.
Perfect. Yeah, we're still waiting.
Okay, so I mean 15. It's pretty low. 15.
Yeah, I'll go 15 as well.
I'm going to go 9. I think 15 sounds very generous to me. It's giving it an average of 13. Pretty low. All right, here you go. Next category. Entrances with pizzazz.
You know, short of her dancing down those stairs, she does a pretty excellent intro, and that's very pizzazzy. And
that door, when the Nora's and the kid are
the Upsons,
the front door
at the very beginning
apartment.
Of the movie, the front door of her apartment, the steam, coming out of the dragon. I'm like, oh, that gives everyone an entrance. You're an entrance into the. There's a lot of pizzazz there, and on your front door,
the eyes swing open, and they're Plus, there were actual theatrical stage entrances in the movie.
Yes.
Where she's wearing so many bangles and charms on her that she announces herself before she comes on.
You think they would have figured that out in dress rehearsal, but I guess not.
She threw that in. That was the fun of that to me. It was unexpected. A little detail she added.
I would also say the horse meditation has a great entrance.
Definitely.
Because at first you see him in the trailer's like shaking.
What's this?
And then he bursts out of it.
Quite a bit.
Any entrance where you hear them and then you see them. To me, that's like 50% of the pizzazz. Yeah.
It's true. Who's it gonna be? I think if this had been I've never seen MAME. I don't know if they upped it because it was musical. Yeah.
I haven't seen it either.
I've never seen it on stage. I've seen the movie. The movie's god awful.
Yeah.
But in a fun way, god awful?
No.
Oh.
I'm glad we didn't pick that
okay.
one. I'm gonna go 75.
75.
I'm going to go 80.
80. I'll go 76. Giving it an average of 77, which is like 45 points higher than I, Tonya, but 23 points lower than the apple.
Yeah, the apple's tough.
The apple's
tough to beat.
All right, our next category. Hell on heels. How many spitfiring ladies aren't taking any guff in there?
100. I mean, she's outstanding.
It's also not just Auntie May either, though.
Loads.
Nora Muldoon.
Everybody.
Vera, her friend.
But she also,
Sally.
Even within her character, she's both like a smart ass and mean and fun and doesn't take any stuff for fools. Like, she's all kinds of hell on heels.
She's always the alpha.
Yes. And her friends and the theater performance and the wasp lady who you're talking about, and the asshole that her sons or her nephew's engaged to. Yeah. 100.
Now, there's really not interesting men in this movie. Like, who is like the great good man in this?
That's part of the
where you're excited when they show up.
I mean, I liked, her friend. Was it Lindsay?
Lindsay.
Yeah. He's like very charming.
Publishes the book.
Yeah, and you think he's going to be.
I did like Mr. Babcock. I think that actor is great.
Yeah, he was like.
Yeah, he seems like he's in Bewitched or something.
He's totally really
was
fun.
A cartoon character. Yeah,
I loved him. I almost wanted him. I was hoping he would have like a turn, like some sort of arc.
Yes.
You know, where he's like on the side at the end. You know what I mean? Like, he is like, despite his like different point of view, he is still a part of this like chosen family, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. And he doesn't want what's best for this. It's not like he's trying to steal the money himself.
Right.
Right. So what do you want to give this for Hell on Heels?
I'm going to give it 100.
100.
I'm going to give it 95, dinging it 5 for Gooch.
Because she's too passive?
She's a little timid. I mean, I'm happy for her. I hope I see good things for her.
Well,
but she's not Hell on Heels.
She is wearing flats. So, I mean.
Orthopedic shoes, in fact.
I'm going to give this 100. I think it's pretty Hell on Heels. Given a 98.33, which is 0.33 points higher than I, Tonya.
I'm dominating I, Tonya.
Imagine if Tonya Harding tried to club Auntie Mame. Now there's a move. That's Godzilla versus Kong. Who needs anything else? All right, our next category. Macabre. How macabre is Auntie Mame?
Pretty outstanding death reveal in the first 90 seconds of the movie.
That's true. Yeah, that's very fun.
It was really fun. I kept thinking, as soon as that happened, I thought, ooh, how did they do it on stage? Like, was there a boy who ran out with an
extra? Yeah.
The guy you just saw writing his will died.
He probably came up through the aisle. That's how you grab an audience. I thought there was going to be one thing. Now it's something else.
And they're handing it out.
Theaters all around me.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And then the cats come out and get in your face.
The stock market crash. I think that's pretty much a lot of suicide. Sad Christmas.
Her husband falls off the Matterhorn.
I think fox hunts are pretty macabre. I hate them.
Sure. She saves the fox.
You hate them? How often do you, are you brought to a fox?
Just that they exist.
Hunt?
I just don't like them. I don't like seeing them. Like, leave that fox alone. And it's also terrified the whole time.
Yeah.
Of course.
I don't like it. And then also Gloria's family's anti-Semitism.
Yes.
True.
I love that she really saves the day in that way. I'm going to give it a 75.
One of the darkest movies you've ever seen.
Oh, I was waiting for that passive aggressive scolding.
No, you can keep it. I'm going to give it a 65.
65.
65 is more appropriate.
I'm going to give it a 35. I don't think this is not a dark movie. There's some stuff, but it's not like you don't leave Auntie Mame going, whew. I don't need to watch Drag Race to cleanse the palate.
It's just, I'm going to stick with it because the whole thing is predicated on a death, and then there are major plot turns because of deaths.
But it's not obsessive. It's almost like moves right past them. It's like death happens, but no one ever like mourns really. I guess Mame does for like
she
a second.
There's no flowers
for like 2
on
minutes.
A, yeah. There's no flowers on a tombstone.
And then she finds the gold digger.
Yeah, it's true.
Giving it a 58.33 in Macabre. Pretty great. All right, next category, dramatic lighting.
Okay, this is one is special because this movie did something that I've never seen in another movie, which was fade to a spotlight in a movie that I really, other than like Looney Tunes, where they like iris in on what somebody's face, you know,
or Star Wars, even they would do, you know, the
they do that dramatic
a little bit.
Some it's more like
they never like lingered and then went to blackout.
No, what they do in Star Wars is they'll cut to a close up that's where somebody's face is like very dramatically lit. I just was like that the dimming of the entire set, you know, to do
it's
that,
fun.
And it's super fun and like you know kind of tricky to do. That means like they had to control the whole set and all.
According
the
to IMDb
it.
Trivia, it's called the Flanagan Fade.
Thank you.
So it must have been invented by in
there's a lighting guy named something Flanagan who liked to do that. I know Morton DeCosta, who directed this, also directed Music Man, and he uses the same effect there.
Okay, so it's part of his creative techniques, toolkit.
And people, so if you don't believe in the auteur theory, just watch Music Man and Auntie Mame, you'll know.
You'll be like, this is one
the
vision.
Same guy.
Carries universe. Over. Yes. Yeah, there are no cartoon birds though. Are there,
are there cartoon birds in Music Man?
I'm thinking Mary
there
Pop-
are not.
Mary Poppins. there are striped suits in
definitely.
Thank
in
you.
Everything.
Let's
so,
the show.
There are also like foggy lens close-ups.
Whenever it's just a single shot of her, she's got a little layer of Vaseline on the lens.
Big time. And those were like, it was sort of later in the movie too. They started doing them. It wasn't like they always did. And it was kind of like, I felt like maybe they're doing it because she's meant to be getting older. And
that's weird. Yeah, it's like a meta choice.
They
put old age makeup on her and then still Vaseline the lens.
Yes. That said, it had generally speaking, like the lighting was like kind of comedy lighting, which to me is like
what's a Technicolor like big screen widescreen comedy.
Look at everything. It's not know what I mean. Like don't focus on one particular dramatic thing. It's everything sort of flat, with the exception of these like sort of special techniques that they did. So, but
well, you had to blast the set with light to get the proper exposure.
Totally.
Yeah.
So I'm going to give it, because of those specials, I'm going to give it a 70.
70.
I'm going to give it an 81 because of those specials.
Wow. They're very special.
They're dramatic.
I'll give it a 70. Giving it a 73.67, which is 13 points lower than the Ten Commandments.
Oh boy. That's hard to beat too.
That had a burning bush.
Yeah.
More movies should have burning bushes. Why doesn't God bring back the burning bush? You got something to say.
Been there and done it.
Ignite a tree.
There's so many UTI jokes running through my head. Carry on.
All right. Next category, vibrato.
So this, in addition to literal vibrato, we mean anytime they take a moment, give you an extra, zhuzh it up. You don't need it, but you love it.
I do think Aunt Rosalind Russell's performance is vibrato. Like on some level, you're like, in real life, this woman would be exhausting.
Yes.
Like, I don't think I could be around her more than like half an hour.
It's every hug is a pressed cheek hug, you know, like, darling.
She does have moments. Like, I like they ugh. I'm glad they actually gave her moments of like vulnerability though. Mm-hmm. Like there's not definitely a lot, but there's like one or two where like, all right, she's not like a cartoon. There is like,
she, it was, and there were, they were there. Sincere too.
Yeah.
I thought they were well done for a movie that was like, yeah, this is sort of a plotless movie. Like when she's broke and she gives away her last quarter to the Salvation Army, you know, and, and that Christmas scene where they're sort of giving each other the gifts that they could barely afford. It was very Gift of the Magi.
Heard of it. So, yes.
Yeah, so
I think the set design is vibrato. I think their version of Georgia is from like this is like Gone with the Wind practically.
It was.
It's definitely like a different century.
There also is something I noticed for the first time this time watching it. The opening party scene, her friend Vera is drinking a martini, but she has what would be the equivalent of a cigarette holder for a martini.
Yeah.
Like she's holding a device that's holding the martini.
That was like, my
that's ridiculous.
That was my martini camp or champagne? Level 1000. Yeah. You know.
Oh, it might have been champagne. Because
if it's champagne, I thought like, oh, maybe you're like dipping it in a bowl.
No.
I was like, what's the purpose of that?
It was
purely
definitely
the theatricality of a cigarette holder.
It seems because they're dangerous to like drink like that, though.
The whole
it
thing
did seem like a weird because it's like the center of gravity is different.
The opening credits are all cigarette holder, right? The whole thing. Yeah. And talk about vibrato.
Well, it's a kaleidoscope.
It's a kaleidoscope with.
Jewels.
And then all the like buttons, all the letters are rhinestone, little like mosaics of the words that you're supposed to read. Super vibrato. I mean, it's so like everything is jewels. The doorway, the
even like her performance, it has said that old stagey feel of like she's always like playing with a jewelry or thing, you know what I mean, like she's always doing something, she's never just standing and listening, she's always, it's like she's full of business from start to finish.
Sure.
She's full of business.
It's very...
that's why they call her the skyscraper.
Oh, Roslyn Empire State Building Russell. I'm gonna give it a high marks for all this, and you know, she's not like beating her breast ever in a sort of, you know, Betty Davis, Barbara Stanwyck sort of way.
Well, weird, a straight man obsessed with breasts.
The and also, where are they? I mean, where is the low cut outfit?
Just like slaps them around.
Get something for the fellas.
I
love baseball to watch this movie.
But short of that sort of dramatic, overdone, like tearing her hair out kind of stuff. So I'll give it an 85.
That's a very different movie. 85.
I'm going to give it a 95, and I'm only dinging it because there's not any actual singing.
Yeah. Mm.
But I think the whole thing is extra in such a fun, great way.
Even the length is extra.
Yes, it
That's
is.
That's true. I'll give it a 95, giving it a 91.67. Which is like 0.70 points lower than the Ten Commandments.
Mm.
But 60 points higher than I, Tonya. So there you go. All right, next category, footwork. How would you rate Auntie Mame on footwork?
This is pretty special footwork in this way. I hadn't thought about this category.
I think the mingling at her apartment in the first party, her mingling is like all footwork. That's very tightly choreographed.
That was the reason I always wanted to watch this movie, because her entrance is... in the trailer when she comes down and like shakes the monkey's hand without looking, you know, like chom, nice to meet you, and she's smoking and she's drinking and it's a big long one shot, and it is so fun. And so
do you
many
guys have this, like if you're home or whatever and like you're joining a party like in progress but you're in the house and there's a party in progress that like you have to join. To me, I'm like, that gives me anxiety. Like, I have to like make my entrance into the party space. Like I have anxiety,
God,
but Auntie Mame is like, hello,
Remy.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Like, am I the only one who has like that weird anxiety for like, I have to make my entrance in real life?
No, you don't feel like you can slip into wherever the party is?
I can never slip in, John. Look at me.
It depends on the group of people. If it's people I'm delighted to see, then I'll like happily break dance my way through the door.
Really?
But I'll moonwalk in backwards.
Oh yeah.
So you have pizzazz on your entrance.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'll play entrance music and I'll text someone at the party and say, in 30 seconds. Play
Start
ACDC's Back in Black, and then I'll open the door right on the downbeat.
Are you in black?
And I'm also air guitar. I'm in the outfit that Patrick Dennis wears, that Angus Young also wears.
sure.
So, okay, footwork. Yeah. So obviously she broke her ankle on the first entrance, so you got to give her the footwork special right. for that.
There's also fun blocking when like Ito lets in Mr. Babcock and has like the dress like blocking mm-hmm. and stuff like hold this.
That's
like,
fun.
That's really fun. And also there... what O'Brien flipping around the apartment like a lunatic.
That part's
oh,
fun.
Oh yeah, he also, was up and down the couch.
Her in the boots, which are the horse riding boots.
She refuses to pull them yeah. up all the way.
She's like a hard time putting them yeah. on and all that. Yeah.
Lots of footwork there. The clomping around on the stage, I guess, is a little bit of footwork.
Sure.
She sells roller skates.
Yep.
Footwork.
That's her job.
Foot, yeah. comma,
selling
work.
Footwear. Yeah, yeah. Work, comma, foot. Yeah.
There's
I'm in
a
the
lot
foot industry.
Of, there's a lot of generally the things that I could see having happened on stage that were like needed to be big, funny gestural mm-hmm. things that right. were clearly the same joke with now like on the set in the movie. But they're not all dancey. They're not like, it's not like the beginning of American in Paris and, you know, where Gene Kelly's like doing his thing with the table. So I'm going to give it a 65.
I will go 73.
73. I was going to go 70. Giving it a 69.33, which is 1 point higher than the man from Uncle.
All right.
All right. Next category. This one might be tough. Spank bank deposits.
Uh-huh.
Now, I know there's no boobs, but those wouldn't count anyways.
You got a little bit of Gucci's boobs in that one moment.
It when she
but
comes
underneath
through
the coat.
Yeah, in the in when yeah yeah. When she yes yeah. Actually, she has the only low cut dress in that one moment. Now that
hello, Gucci.
Gooch. Yeah. That was her character.
Yeah. That's like sitcom.
Very.
But I guess this is like yeah. what predated.
She also
sitcom.
Shows up in the last 40 minutes of the movie. So right. it's like hit your marks broad so they yeah. remember you.
Rosalind Russell is, you know, she's like gorgeous, but I mean, she's 50 something in this movie. Like she is
she's
pretty.
Not sexy.
Yeah, but she's not Viola wow. sexy.
I mean, she's a strong, powerful woman. Isn't that sexy? But she's like, you know, she's the alpha. She's always in control. She will break you in half and yeah. then give you a gin at the end, you know?
Yeah. You're describing my type.
So 100.
But there's not a lot of like hunky, like you would think if they had shown like the guy's death in the steam room.
Mm-hmm.
There's a classic opportunity.
Sure.
Yeah. And one wonders how he
especially
died.
With that eye with the Flanagan face.
Thank
how
you.
That would yeah. go.
Of him going collapsing. And then two Russian gangsters come in and try to kill him. Ever see that scene? Ooh.
History
what's
of
that
violence.
From? That's my podcast.
No, I've seen yes, the yeah, Vigo.
Very sexy.
He's not wearing any pads in that action scene. There's no,
no.
padding.
He gets his ass kicked and
he's really doing
completely
it.
Completely naked. Okay, Spank Bank, it's pretty low. It's just not a sexy movie in that way. It's a cute, fun movie. I'm gonna give it like a 25.
25?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm gonna give it a 3.
Oh, okay. I see.
Sorry, it's all right.
That's why we each give a score.
Yeah, I'm gonna give it a 4.
Okay.
I don't know for what. Mountain climbing,
okay.
I guess.
Yeah. You do have that tattoo.
I would be loved to be lost on a Matterhorn. giving it a 10.67, which is 60 points lower than the Ten Commandments, one of the sexier movies we've ever seen.
So
all right.
Oiled up, that movie.
They're yeah. so oiled up. Yeah. And there's a lot of bondage, you know?
Yeah.
All right. Finally, the last of the canon categories. On a scale of 0 to 100, how likely are you to recommend Anti-Mame to a gay person?
Oh, 100. It's such an easy,
yeah.
fun movie to recommend. The only thing that is sort of like, you gotta be ready for this, is that it's over 2 hours. And you gotta, you know, which is, you guys watch a ton of movies for this. You sure. know, I'm sure your time is valuable. 2 hour, if you see the 2 hour thing, you're probably saying to yourself, okay, I gotta figure this out.
Hour
you
know? 137 minutes. I'm like, oof, this is gonna. Oof. This is gonna
one time rough. I was at the ArcLight. I watched Dunkirk for Dunkirk, that movie.
Yeah.
And they, you know, at the ArcLight, they make announcements before the movie, and they say like, the running time. And the guy came out and he was like, Dunkirk, a pleasantly short running time of 88 minutes or something. So you have that to look forward to.
Great.
And all of us were like, yeah, man. There was like a murmur.
Right. Oh, we could do something else after this.
Exactly. Yeah. It'll still be light out when we leave.
There was a tweet going around this week where somebody, some big nerd was like, they released the running time for the new Mortal Kombat movie and it's like an hour and 50 minutes. And like, they aren't doing it justice. This movie's going to be trash because the Mortal Kombat movie's only an hour and 50 minutes. How much do you need?
Yeah.
It's a video game.
Yeah.
As they say, a lot of world building to do.
No, they didn't do it in the first. The first one's only like an hour and 45 minutes.
Yeah. And it's a classic.
First one is fun trash, I would say.
I
go on the record.
I haven't seen
trash.
It in so long that I can't remember, but I know people consider it to be a lot of fun.
Well, you remember the theme song, I'm sure.
Mortal Kombat.
Oh, wait, no, it's something like that.
Yeah.
A classic.
Hey, Mortal Kombat. Hey.
Hey.
Mortal Kombat.
Sweet Caroline. Ba, ba, ba.
So yes, 100%. 100. I would recommend it. Yes.
Yeah, I'll go 100 as well because
oh,
I think it's
I
so
heard some
classic.
Hesitation.
The only thing I was thinking, I don't think there's anything like problematic with Ito, but Ito is a very underwritten character, yes, and I know for yeah. the
I think
the
that
musical,
is the problematic aspect of it is that it's
for the musical, it's a little worse and has a little more problems. So like, yeah, it's one of those things where, like the character isn't. He's never made fun of or like is the butt of a joke, but he is sort of like
but he's a stereotype.
Yes, exactly.
He is played by a Japanese actor.
That's
which
true.
To
correct.
Its advantage. It's not Mickey Definitely. Rooney. Yeah.
Right. Right. And we are meant to like him throughout right. the whole movie. So there's never a point where like dumb Ito
right.
did that mistake again or anything like that.
When I say dumb Ito, I'm referring to the O.J. Simpson trial.
Thank,
oh,
you.
Dumb Ito.
Thank you. But beyond that, I do think it's so like it's so iconic. It's such a type. It's such a character that I just feel like a gay person should know. You know, you should mm-hmm. be aware
Rosetta
of
Rosetta Stone.
The reference. Exactly. So I'll go 90.
That's a great drag name. Rosetta Stone.
Rosetta Stone. I'm sure that exists.
Yeah.
I'm going to go 99.
99. Yeah, it's tough because it is like there is like some of the problematic stuff. I'll give it a, but I think everyone should see. I'll give it a 96. I would definitely recommend the Apple more. So there you go.
All right.
Giving it a 98.33. Also, it is one of those movies where you could be like, if you just watch the very first scene and the very last scene,
mm-hmm.
you get it.
I agree with that.
That should be every movie, according to all the screenwriting books.
Yeah. That's 100, that is exactly what I would say. I'd be like, you got to at least watch the beginning and then you'll sort of get it.
Like
you
if you're
know?
On board after that, if you don't like the beginning, then you're not going to like the rest of it.
Agreed. Agreed.
But if you're 50-50 on the beginning, skip to the end.
Agreed. And then you could say you watched it.
Yeah. You got the gist. All right. Now we are into the wheel category.
Yay.
So these are all categories that previous guests have brought in. They've been put on this wheel, which is an app on my phone. So we're going to spin it 4 times.
It looks like a
and
DNA
then whatever
chart.
Randomly pops up, we will judge it on. And then finally, you will come up with a category, which we will add to the wheel.
Do you like acting on stage, Nate? Have you done like theater, much theater?
I did one play one time other than, you know, the UCB. So sure. It was one like proper play. And it was outstanding. It was such an amazing experience. And I loved my co-stars and I loved the whole thing. And I just, as soon as it was done, I wanted to do it again. And it was really fun. And we'll get to it when we talk about it, but it was when we get to talk about the new category, but like, because this is such a theater movie, like it's based on a play and there's theater in it and there's behind, like literal in the wings theater stuff. I was like, yeah, that's the kind of category I want to add because theater, the world of theater is like a gay space. It just is, you know, like most of the cast was gay. The director was gay. The stage manager was gay, you know, like, and I felt like I'm in the world where gay men have had control of this world for so long that I'm like visiting as a straight guy, you know?
Sure.
And I felt like
it's like when I go to Pep Boys.
Exactly. It's I mean I
do love it there.
I want I to
love
talk
it.
Well,
about
the name.
This.
Always that looking to go to go back.
I walk in like, oh, it's not what I thought. But air filters.
Okay. Since we're here.
Yeah, sometimes you have to, right? No, I want to talk about it in a sensitive way because I was like, well, it is like when I go to a party and it's mostly gay men, I'm like, oh, there is like, there's like a code switch that happens, right? And it feels like, oh, I'm not, you know, like it's clear that like in there's a straight world and there's a gay world. Sure. When I was in the theater world, I was like, I'm not, this isn't like, you know, there's just an attentiveness to like,
right,
your person, your body, your, you know, like the way you communicate, the language, the verbs you use, the nouns you use, all the things. I was like, yeah, you just pay a little bit more attention because you're in a universe. And therefore I was like, that's a thing, like not just a nod to theater, is like, that's gotta be a gayer thing, you know? And so therefore we're jumping ahead to the thing I want to add to the wheel, but okay, let's go to the wheel. You spun it.
I did. Our first category, intensely close conversations.
Well, the what's their faces? The waspy the parents. Upsons, the
Upsons. They get right in her face, mm-hmm, when they're talking about Patrick's future.
In general, the conversations happen very closely. That whole beginning is a lot of like, like kissing on the cheeks and talking and patting, right, each other. And there's lots of like facing, cheek to cheek, facing the camera, like, oh dear, what are we going to do? And everything's going to be, yeah, fine. And, you know, there's lots
I have
and lots
to say,
that.
Watching this movie reminded me, like, John Flynn is one of the best party minglers you've ever seen.
Hmm? I beg your pardon, what?
That's not bad. That's good. You're just good at mingling. I'm bad at, like, I'm one of those people, like, I like finding one person and standing there the whole time. And then, like, if they go mingle, I'm like, but I thought we had a connection.
Well, I've only got 3 minutes of conversation in
John's. Very good at mingling.
I think I'm pretty good at it, and it comes from being a codependent. So I want everybody to like me. So yeah. There's a thing called the Jewish goodbye. It's also known as the actor's goodbye, where you're like, my partner will say to me, hey, you have 20 minutes, and then we actually need to leave. So start your Jewish goodbye. And you have to like walk around and be like, hey, it's so good to see you. And one more meaningful connection.
Sure.
Okay.
We used to always say those people are running for mayor.
Like, sure, pressing the flesh, yeah. 30 seconds of making you feel good about yourself.
I just run out of a place when I'm done. It's really the best way to do it. You're going to see everyone again.
It's the fine. Irish goodbye.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's the way to do it. Intensely close conversations.
I'm going
to
give it a high. It's out of 100, right?
Yep.
Okay. It's high marks. High marks. 90.
90?
Yes.
I'll go
83. I gotta go 70. Like, there were some, but it wasn't like, so much of it is wide shots anyways.
True.
Given an 81 in intensely close conversations. Don't worry, we'll be mingling again very soon.
One day.
By August.
Okay, here we go. Pretty good, I think, on this one. Wigs.
Wigs. Mm.
I mean,
there's a whole scene where they add a fall.
Yeah, she takes out a box of wigs.
Box of wigs.
Yeah. And you know what I love about that scene is it takes a significant amount of time for her to get the wig right before she comes down.
Yeah.
It's not like movie magic where like you cut away and then all of a sudden she's put together. It takes her like a good 5 minutes to like get that thing going. That's a big wig scene, but otherwise.
She's got a variety of hair.
She does, but it generally it's the same deal. It's sort of like cropped and bangs, you know. It's not a lot of
different colors.
Yeah, there's not a lot of. It's not. There's no Moira Rose going on here.
Certainly not. No.
Wigs. I'm gonna give it like a 50.
50.
I'll go 61.
61. I'll go 55. Giving it a average of 55.33. Do you ever have to wear a wig in a show?
I've done for like sketches. I've had to wear wigs, and I have several, you know, that I like can't get rid of.
You can't
like,
get rid of them?
Well, you might need it.
Every time you throw them away, they show up again in your closet.
Exactly.
I was 5 years ago, I went through my prop box and I found like for a sketch I had a swastika armband. I was like,
oh,
I have to get rid of this, and B, in a careful way. I can't just, you know, chuck
it. You have to cut it in several pieces for us and then throw it
it's
out.
It's like an old credit card.
Right. This is damning.
Okay, here we go. Wearing another's clothes.
Wearing another's clothes.
That's well, there's costumes in the play.
Right.
Which I know Mark sometimes doesn't like
that,
but
that's the actor's costume.
But when Mame is in the South for the writing,
friend Sally's like, you can borrow my riding clothes.
And right? That's exactly my size. Yeah. And she gives her her boots and everything. That's the big switcheroo. She dresses
Gooch
up.
Wears someone,
she dresses up Gooch? Gooch's. Yeah. In a nice outfit to go out.
In a nice dress.
I don't feel like she ever dresses Patrick, does she? Like, she never like makes he him never wear
gets a,
something.
He gets long pants as a gift.
She gives him long pants, right? And he's so excited.
Very excited. Yeah. But yet he's straight, this character. Okay. Yeah.
And he has comments for her after her show. I think maybe there's an argument to make that Brian O'Banion, that sort of writer editor who's supposed to be helping with her book, who's very like Joe Gillis-ing her and like using her money to buy clothes and stuff. You can throw a few extra points for him.
I wouldn't.
You wouldn't, but that's all right.
But you're right. For a movie that is as sitcom-y as it is, there isn't a scene of like, you need to pretend to be my wife so that, you know, my boss thinks that I'm married.
Right.
So in that case, I'm going to say it's like a 60.
60.
Yeah, I'll go 55.
55. And I'm going to go 45. Giving it an average of 53.33. We're one category away from this category you've been building up, Nate.
Great. I don't know how to describe it. You're going to have to help me like piece it all together. Okay.
All right.
Okay. Non-traditional murder weapon.
Well,
crazy horse. Because the guy comes and said that you're going to murder someone with that horse one day.
Sure.
But is that not really... Is horse trampling that non-traditional? I mean, if you've ever read anything about the history of the West.
People are like, do we shoot them? Do we stab them? Do we trample them with a horse?
That's the history of the American colonization.
It is. You know? There used to be executions. There were hangings, and then there were horse tramplings where they would tie you down to the ground.
And no one is actually murdered. Is another
no one is
okay,
murdered.
It doesn't say someone actually, but it's a weapon someone has used. I think you got to give some points for that crazy horse.
I don't have to do anything, John.
I think you do.
The steam room could have been a murder. He could have had some bad debts, and the guys locked the door on him, and he.
That's definitely possible.
That's like that a John Wick movie.
I can't remember which one, but they locked the door on the guy, and he steamed to death. And then the Matterhorn, you know, she didn't pull him. He slipped, right?
Because he's always leaning to take photos.
Right. Like a real dumbass.
Real dumb.
So artistic expression as a murder weapon?
Sure. There's a lot of character.
Wasn't that gravity though? Like it's falling off a mountain. I feel like that's pretty traditional too. Like how many people have died falling off a mountain?
Non-traditional murder. There really isn't murder, so I can't give it high marks. I mean, even those deaths are like they weren't
murders.
They weren't murder. So I mean, I don't want to give it a goose egg. So I'll give it a 5.
A 5.
I'm giving it a 25 for that crazy horse.
Meditation. I'll give it a 6. Giving it an average of 12 in non-traditional murder weapons. All right, Nate, the time has come for you to add a category that we can use to judge Auntie Mame in other future movies because it will be added to the wheel and maybe in a few months become bonus or canon.
Bonus
who knows?
Canon, so many things.
Perhaps it is fun when one advances.
When they graduate.
Yeah. Okay. So generally, I was thinking of like, what should I do even before I watched the movie? And then I was like, okay, well, it's going to be somewhere in the theater world. I just was thinking theater tropes or theater, like seeing, actually the first one that came to mind was like seeing backstage at a theater, because I was like, that is the world, and getting there,
like,
and seeing
backstage
that.
Drama.
Yes.
Backstage drama. There you go.
That's nice.
I like
Let's
that.
Go with that.
Showgirls would do very well on that.
Oh my
very
God. Well. Yeah.
But that's like, could have been the working title for us. We know. Mm-hmm. Or people who work on the magazine backstage. What's the drama going on
What's
that
the
magazine? Yeah.
What's the real story?
Yeah.
That's so dumb.
Forget about the auditions.
It'd be like, I forgot to BCC you, the staff. On the, it'd be a lot of that.
Right.
There's an equity chorus call we need to let people know about. So sorry.
No one's buying this anymore.
There was something like about theater tropey thing like that I was like a stepping out and privately having a reaction to something that we behind the camera can see but the other people in the scene can't, like, for instance, her,
oh, right.
her and like listening to the Wasp couple parents, like stepping away and clearly like calculating like how she's going to dupe them, you know, that kind of thing, you know, but I was like, let's go with backstage drama. I think that's fun.
I like backstage drama. I think that's fun.
And so, this has a ton of it.
It has a huge, huge scene.
The movie then, Lincoln would do well. How's he going to get the votes?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Generally, I mean, like, there's loads of, I would say, all the like stuff in the apartment before the entrance of the foil, right? All mm-hmm. that is backstage drama of like plotting, in addition to the literal backstage drama on the stage, which is
right.
which is really fun. So I'll give it like a solid, you know, if noises off is like 100, right? This is like 75.
I'll go 85 on that one. I feel like the whole thing is sort of performancey.
There's only that one scene where there's actual
backstage. But I think there's something, she's always like scheming or like figuring stuff out or like, I don't know.
No, I'm going to give it a 20.
Oh boy.
20?
There's only the one scene, a backstage drum, where we're seeing behind the scenes of something.
Let me change my category.
No, I love this category.
They reminisce about what was that show they were in, Choo Chim Girls or something like that? Choo Chim Girls.
Oh yeah, and she's talking about like doing her.
They do that number.
I was the first person in the chorus.
Mm-hmm. Reminiscing is drama. No, thank you.
Reminiscing about theater.
That is not. Let me tell you, that's the opposite of drama. That's Snoozeville.
There is the aside from the backstage. Like in the Wings drama, there is that whole interchange between her and Patrick when the curtain is down and the lights change and there's a bare bulb. I mean, it's like, so right. despondent. Yeah. Let me just set this lamp right here and there's one little.
I mean, that's macabre.
Yeah, that was macabre.
Giving it an average of 60 in backstage drama. All right, now we are into the bonus categories.
So these categories are just bonus. So previously, if a category didn't do well, it would penalize it. This is just extra. So we're going 0 to 10 for all of these.
Got it.
All right, so the first one, how would you rate Anti-Mame in musical potential?
Well,
there was a musical.
There was.
10.
And you still see the potential.
Yes, I would say absolutely. It felt like it was going to be. You know, it didn't feel like there were moments where it was
these widescreen composition. Yeah, it's all on everything's on a soundstage.
Well, especially if you know the musical, there are so many lines from it that like inspire or go into a song.
Oh, sure. Really? Like
that the there ping pong ball. Like,
yeah.
Yes, exactly that.
Oh,
one.
Really?
Yes.
I'm gonna go.
What's
10.
The big song from Mame the Musical?
The one you definitely know is "We Need a Little Christmas" is from Mame.
We need a little Christmas.
Yeah,
that song is so obnoxious. I know you know it.
What are the other big songs? I mean, like "It's Today," "Bosom Buddies," because B. Arthur was also in the movie and the original version of it.
Cool.
There's certain songs if you heard, you'd be like, "Oh, okay, I get." Like they might sound familiar to you. It's very Jerry Hermony.
Nate's giving it a 10.
We're giving it a 10.
Also 10.
I mean, yeah, they did it. Giving it an average of 10, tying it with "Waiting for Guffman."
Ooh, was there a "Waiting for Guffman" musical?
Not yet.
Some people in Chicago, they have been doing like a stage version of it.
That's fun.
Where they do Red, White, and Blaine with a few extra numbers and whatnot.
Cool.
All right. The next category, Queer Menace. How would you rate this on Queer Menace? Well, I would say Mame's friends, according to like Nora, Mr. Babcock, and
yeah, the sort of bohemian lifestyle feels very like Queer Menace.
Yeah, like that feels like a subtext of everything is.
And the whole sort of like rescuing the Jewish children. At the end, I sort of felt like they picked Jewish children, but it could have been a surrogate for any marginalized person. You know,
I feel like these wasps—they have a big umbrella of things they don't like.
They were like, it's an exclusive. They live in an exclusive part of Connecticut, and you know, anyone who's not a Protestant white person, right. you know, like would have been objective. or a subject to.
You guys lived on the East Coast. Have you met any like wasps like this?
Sure.
Are they around?
Yeah. Old Mayflower blood, yeah, mm-hmm. for sure. They're totally around.
To me, it's like seeing like whenever they show like a backlot of a movie, there's like a nun walking or like astronauts. It just feels like there's one in the wild.
No. I mean,
like to me, it's always something I usually only see in the movies.
Well, there's, you know, I went to college in the Northeast, and loads of kids went to that college went to like prep schools in the Northeast, you know, and there's loads of that. They're just, you know, sometimes it's like, ugh, private school kids, you know, like there's sort of a sure. stigma of their privilege. Yeah. But they're fine, you know. Yeah, they're great. They're all wonderful, not racist people.
You're not here to say everyone who went to private school is a racist asshole. That is not right. what you came here to do.
No, it's not.
I want to make that clear.
Right. Some of
queer menace.
Some of them were wonderful. Introduced me to Morrissey, stuff like that.
nothing problematic about Morrissey.
okay, so queer menace. Yeah. It's not explicit, so I can't go like super high with
sure.
it. I'm gonna say like a six.
Six. I'll go five. Well, I'm also going to go five. Given an average of 5.33%, which is 2 points higher than the Ten Commandments.
Okay. Similar right. sort of like unspoken criticism, you know?
Yes.
You can see yourself in the marginalized kind of thing. Okay.
Our next category. Character actress makes a big swing.
I mean, not only she was nominated for an Academy Award Gooch. For it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, her
and Joanna
it felt,
Barnes.
It felt Laura like a Barnes. Character. Didn't she feel like a character Rachel Dratch would play on Saturday Night Live? Like,
yeah, definitely.
It was
a real Debbie Downer.
Yeah, it was kind of like a goofy, cartoonish character. Her friend Vera Carroll. What's her name? The actress.
Coral Brown. Is
Coral right. Brown. Yeah.
Played Vera. Yeah.
She was pretty. She's huge.
Well, imagine your cast opposite like Rosalind Russell as Auntie Mamie. Like, I guess I got to go big. I can't like.
Again, all of those peripheral characters to me just felt like that's how it would be if it was on stage.
Right.
You know, that character would laugh right. like, you know, like so fake, but fun if it was theater and therefore in this overblown. So, yeah, big swings. I mean, like an 8.5.
8.5.
I'll go seven.
Seven. I got to go eight for my beloved Gloria.
It's true.
Giving it a 7.83%, which is 0.83 points higher than the Apple. Not bad. All right. Next category.
Finally.
Witches. How witchy is Auntie Mame?
In a way, very. And then in another way, not at all. You know?
Exactly. Yes.
she's scheming.
There's the guy who looks like Rasputin.
Yeah, he does.
In the very beginning.
Right. Orthodox priest.
Yeah, he's kind of like...
when he showed up, I was like, is Rasputin in this movie?
She knows Rasputin. I wouldn't be surprised if Rasputin was there. Or like Dr. Strange.
One of her cocktail parties.
Yeah.
Witchy.
It's not very.
It's not very.
There's a way in which she has sort of like a fairy godmother energy.
Yes.
Yeah, she's like a white witch.
Exactly.
And manipulating sort of the chairs.
Yes. There's a bit of manipulation.
Casting a spell.
Literally pulling the strings.
Pulling the strings. There
yeah.
we go.
But she's also not like, you know, no one's.
There's no cauldron.
Yeah, right. There's no one turning into a frog or dying or whatever. So let's say six.
Six.
I'll go four.
Four. John always tough in the witchy category. I'm going to give it a four as well, giving it a 4.67. All right, next category. This one might be tough. Gay actors playing gay roles.
Oh, dear.
Well, there's just not enough information.
There's not enough information.
And luckily, there's gay people.
So if it gets a zero, it doesn't suffer because of it.
I can't. I mean, I even looked up a few because one of the wheel categories I was considering was like gay references that only gay people get. You know, like things like things that I would never know, words, but that you were like, well, that person was, you know, like
poppers.
Yeah. Something like that. Things that like, you got to know, have gay men in your life to get that reference, you know, something like that.
Raise your B-sides.
Yeah.
I'm very familiar. So you keep going.
Nate.
I don't even know what you're talking about. Erasure is I try to discover. Isn't that them?
Yes.
That is. Yeah, yes. Okay. Very good.
I love Erasure.
Suspiciously good.
Gay men. Yeah. So, but then I didn't know anybody and nothing popped out. So, yeah. I think it's a goose egg.
Yeah. I'll go zero as well.
Yeah. I got to go zero. do better, Mervyn LeRoy or whatever. What was his name?
Morton DeCosta.
That's the director.
It sounds right.
Right. Yeah. All right. You might make up a lot of points here, though. Themes of mothers.
Okay.
Well, so, Auntie Mame becomes a mother.
Definitely.
She never has a child, but she is a
surrogate. She adopts Patrick.
She adopts Patrick.
She becomes a mother.
So she is Auntie Mame, though.
Right. Is Auntie M not? Whatever happened to Dorothy's parents? Did we ever find out?
I don't think we do.
They're somewhere over the rainbow, I guess.
Yep. Mm. Dead is what they are.
I mean, they probably are.
So, yeah. I mean, it's pretty. It's sort of all about parenting and her choices on her discovering how to take care of this kid. And I actually thought the arc was going to be her like not taking care of him and then figuring out that she needs to in order to like have a, like about a boy or something, you know?
Right. She has that moment right at the beginning when it's like, she's like tucking him in like, oh, I'm not going. Like, he's like, aren't you going out? It's like, no, I'm staying right here. You're like, oh, that's nice. She
and I thought she was saying that and then she would still go out and get hammered. And she like steps into the role pretty immediately.
She has her priorities straight.
And then pretty much dedicates her life. She weeps when he gets shipped to boarding school because she wants him to stick around and not be, you know, corrupted as it were by traditional
squares.
Yeah. I'm going to say it's out of 100 again. We're back
10.
To 100, right?
Zero 10. To 10.
Mothers. Yeah, I mean, I'm gonna go 10.
10.
Yeah,
I'm gonna go 7.
7.
Because I do think like that is sort of her arc. As part of it is just sort of like coming to terms with like, how do I be a good mother? But it's not huge. It's not front and center. The musical, I think, actually makes that more of a thing for her than the stage play. But I do think that's something that's part of it, of her trying to figure out how to become a mother.
Because she's pretty good from the get go and pretty much stays consistent throughout.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'll give it a 7 as well, giving an average of 8. All right, our next category, pearl clutching.
Mm-hmm.
Heard of it?
Yep, there's some fun stuff. If you count Mr. Babcock's reaction to stuff,
I definitely clutching,
then it starts early.
Yes,
and a lot of his like. and then it escalates really to the wasps
to the parasites in the south and then the ups and
then Patrick himself becomes a pearl clutcher and the greatest betrayal of the entire film.
And yet we know he's going to come around, right?
He wrote the book.
We hoped.
So pearl, there's quite a bit, but it's also not like.
Well, when they see Mrs. Gooch pregnant, like who is she? Like what's her what? Where's her family? Like they can't imagine.
And she herself is critical of herself. She can't believe that she's not being married.
I can't imagine being interested in a pregnant woman's backstory.
Yeah. Exactly. Who's that? Who cares?
Who cares?
There is so much going on here. That is the least of my
concern. Yeah. Who put these chairs in? These pneumatic seats in? How deep is this floor?
I'm going to say like a 7. 7?
7.
I'm going to say 8 because I feel like so much of it is driven with her making people be like, Mame Dennis.
Mm. Right. I'm going to give it a 9 because if this isn't high in pearl, you know, what is?
That's
true.
Mm-hmm.
Give it an average of 8. All right. Finally, I think you'd make up a lot of points here too. Quips. How quippy is Auntie Mame?
Really solid in the clip quip category. I mean, I knew the when you're from Pittsburgh, you have to do something line before I saw the movie. And I've noted like a few of the special ones and I Googled them and I was like, oh, they've been used all over the place. Like people reference them all the time. Like you're going to turn him into an Aryan from Darien, married off to a woman with braces on her brains. and I was like, that one's fun. did I get a mention? Mentioned, you're exposed in the newspaper. Yes. there were lots of good ones. It's not overflowing, you know, it's not like a quip a minute as it were,
right?
But it's got some solid iconic ones. Like
really
just
does.
Life's a banquet and most poor sons of bitches are starving to death is like
yep
That's huge.
My favorite is that you wouldn't be losing a daughter, you'd be gaining a patio.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's just tons of them.
What a seat. They kept talking about her butt in the in the horse riding stuff. Like
They'd always do a thing when someone would say something, seat. You know, with like subtext, like something kind of racy, someone would say it and then like pause and like turn their head, like, did I just hear what I think I heard?
Yeah.
Very theatrical.
Quippy. So it's not the only negative points are that it's not like, okay, we have a quota of quip a minute, you know.
Sure.
So I'm gonna say it's like in the 80s, 88.
8.8, you want to say? You're still in 10. 88.
0 to 10.
Oh, 8.8.
8.8, that works.
No, I said 88. And heartbreaks.
I'm going to go 9. I think it's pretty rat-a-tat.
Yeah, I'll give it a 9. Giving it an 8.93, which is about 4 points higher than 10 Commandments when it comes to quips. Pretty good. Much quippier than the 10 Commandments. All right.
It is.
Next.
Not as oil.
Group. Not less, lot less oil. All right. Yeah. Now we're into the iconic categories.
So these are broader ranging categories. Back to 0 to 100.
All right. So the first one, on a scale of 0 to 100, what are you going to rate Auntie Mame in? Homoeroticism.
Oh. Just wait for that.
That's tough.
the homoeroticism, not so much.
Not so homoerotic. Is there, there's hardly even heteroeroticism.
Yeah.
No, it's not a very erotic movie. I'm going to say 8.8.
Out of 100?
Just because it's fun.
You can say 8.8.
I'll go 9 for this as well. I think if you're one of those queens who's really into like interior design, this will give you a boner, but
people
that's
like,
about it.
Could you say about any movie if you're into places?
Sure.
This will be erotic for you.
But I think this, but the
that's homoerotic. Like,
her house is her apartment is done over 11 times in this movie.
And that's homoerotic to you?
For some people. I didn't say it was for me. I said for some people.
You're being very generous. I'm going to give it a 3. Giving it that's a 6.93. Okay. All right, next. Over the top wardrobe.
Okay. Now we're onto something.
Here we go.
Pretty special.
Constant.
Let's talk about
out to Ori Kelly.
She puts like, it's not even a hat that she puts on. Isn't it like a piece of, it's like a pillowcase or something. And she flips it inside out, puts it on her head and then attaches an ornament and then puts a cardinal on a dead cardinal, fake cardinal onto the holly that she put on. I mean, she's literally putting a hat on a hat on a hat.
Yeah, right.
Her outfits are really fun. There's loads of mink and loads of, I mean, her friend exits her apartment dragging a mink behind her.
There's that one weird scene where like she's in bed and she wakes up and she puts on like a poofy shawl just for to be in bed.
Sure. Well, you can't be naked back then.
No. She also had like, even her eye mask when she was sleeping was like extra.
People must have been doing laundry all the time back then. They had so many clothes, so many layers.
I think they just didn't wash them. I think they just put tons of perfume on, you know, and cologne and that, you know.
Yeah,
disgusting.
It's high, but again, it's still in like one lane. Like there aren't like a variety of grand.
You only get variety when they go to the South. When it's like a different era.
And then there's like those sort of, you know, Southern big shoulder.
But we do get her, because as her apartment redecorates, so does her own aesthetic. Like her aesthetic changes to match. She's always reinventing herself.
It's high. I just think it's just not all the way. So we're in hundreds, right?
0 to 100.
Yes.
75.
I'm going 95. I just think it's so just like one iconic look after the other.
I'll give it a 93. Giving it an 87.67. And finally, the last of the iconic categories, camp factor. How campy is Auntie Mame?
Martini glass holder.
Camp. Level camp.
This is so campy. We are getting cavities on s'mores. And I don't know. Ask me how campy it is. Where this is so campy.
How campy is it?
We're playing Spin the Bottle for the first time behind the barn.
That's pretty campy.
Yeah. we are, if you're me. Okay. Yeah. 100%. 100.
100.
Yeah, this is a camp feast, this show. I'll give it 100 as well.
This show. I got a quick list. We've already mentioned a lot of it, but I edited those out. All right, here we go. Filming a movie in Technorama. The credit Shoes by Delman. Unintentionally shaking hands with a monkey. A child making a cocktail. A school that has yogurt time. An actress getting upstaged by charm bracelets. Single-handedly closing a play. Macy's at Christmas. Dying on your honeymoon. Mrs. Gooch personifying the word bleak. A gold digger. Constantly taking big swings with your apartment decor. Judging your aunt for her peccadillos. Realizing your beloved nephew has become a conservative. Giving your secretary a makeover. Asking a woman in a fully sequined jumpsuit and coat why she isn't dressed. This line.
Imagine anybody speaking French to a counterman at Schwartz.
Terrible recipes from the Ladies' Home Journal. Pneumatically rising furniture. Drinks that light on fire. Shaming a pregnant woman. Mame titling her book, Live, Live, Live. And finally, what's wrong with Muriel Puce? So I think it's pretty dang. Yeah, I think it's 100.
Yay!
And I was just tying it with the apple.
Okay.
Now finally, we are into the crown jewels.
So these we're not rating. It's just we all agreed either gets it or it doesn't.
Right.
All right. So the first one, a 15% bonus of all the points, 15% bump for a positive portrayal of homosexuality.
Doesn't get it.
No, I don't. I think that's fair.
No, it's so it feels one of those things where like it's so close because if it's if you're talking about like a positive portrayal of like alternative lifestyle, I feel like you would get it. But sure. It's. But I agree that it
again,
doesn't.
It's like all stand-in, like bohemian, sort of generic bohemian lifestyle, right. You know.
But it would take him about 40 years before they would even have a problem. We're still about 40 years away. Finally, negative 50% of all the points. If this is the movie Boat Trip.
This is not the movie Boat Trip, so it will not lose 50% of its points.
Yay.
All right.
Yay.
Boo. So that's it. We've came to the end. That's everything.
So do you still think, are you still, now that we've gone through it, are you still thinking top 20?
Oh, it's hard to know. It really, like, I need a, I've been keeping a spreadsheet of my own over the last 94 episodes of your show.
Wow.
There was a thought, I did consider, how many episodes can I crush to see if I can gauge where this is going to I was like, no, it's not going to. Still in the top 20. Yeah, I think we're in okay shape to be in the top 20.
All right. Okay. Well, I will tell you exactly how you did. Out of a total possible 2,654.27 points, Anti-Mame has scored 1,894.20, giving it a percentage of 71.36%, making it the 22nd gayest movie ever. Not as gay as Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, but gayer than 300.
Oh, that's okay.
You know?
Yeah.
I guess it's that makes sense.
Yes. It's sort of nice to hear that an old Hollywood romp will outscore 300 because it's so much more watchable, isn't it, than 300?
I think so.
I don't know. I think 300 is very watchable in terms of just the bodies on display. Like that is not.
I mean, it's a different
experience.
Definitely.
I mean, you're not even using your head. But like the difference, 300 has 71.24. Anti-Mame has 71.36. So there's only a 0.12%.
It's very close.
Difference.
The science.
And Sergeant Pepper is 71.46. So it's all very, they're in the 71s percentile.
Mm-hmm. It does sort of, does it feel like appropriately rated to you?
I think because there's absolutely no homoeroticism.
Because there's no homoeroticism. Yes. That's the thing. If it had a gay character.
Yeah, it would. Yeah, those were all the categories that dropped it. But it also is like one of those movies that's just like, you know, it's
a
scary
movie
that's like about an old Hollywood, big costumes and, you know, overdone sets and everything. And then to be right next to 300, which is very gay for like totally different reasons, you know,
exactly.
it's kind of fun. It feels like, yeah, that's appropriately ranked. It's not the apple. It's not Bride of Frankenstein. It's not female trouble. You know?
No. They're a lot hornier. You can't be just campy and have great clothes.
Right.
Yep. Story of my life.
You've learned this now.
It takes. Sometimes we're all on our own journey. I stopped going to Old Navy. Too boxy, I realize.
Well done.
Not flattering for anyone.
And you weren't saving any money because you have to throw them away after 6 months.
Falls apart. Yeah. The only thing you should buy at Old Navy are flip flops.
I agree. Actually, sometimes I would go to Old Navy on my way to an audition when I was like, "Oh crap, I need a pink shirt." I gotta stop there real quick. And $9.99 later, I'm at the audition. Dressed appropriately.
Well, Nate, thank you so much for doing this. I'm glad you came to play. Is there anything you like to plug, promote, or shill for at this time?
Sure. Just give a shout out to my podcast, What's That From? Check it out on podcast places. And that is it. Unless John's book ever comes out. I have I mentioned in it.
Oh, keep an eye out.
Okay.
We got ourselves a Zelig over here. Thank you so much. What a delight.
Thank you for having me.
And we'll be right back. We're back.
That was delightful.
That was delightful. Did you think it was going to score higher?
I mean, it's what we said before, that it's a classic case of there are certain things about it that are so iconic and so like
you really got to do well in those three categories.
But it lacks certain things.
It's got to look great.
Completely absent. Yeah. Right. It's got to have a fun spirit and you got to have gay characters.
You got to have true of your life too.
It's yes.
Have we learned nothing from Tu Wong Fu? You gotta have gays in your life. Can I be honest though? Tu Wong Fu? Tu Long Fu. Oh, that's what I say.
Okay. Wow. Wow, that's a masterful
take.
Don't
you think it's a little slow?
I saw it when it came out and was like, that's cute. And I haven't seen it again since.
Where's that musical?
I'm sure it exists somewhere. Someone must have done it.
Someone's working on it.
I'm sure it's being workshopped as we speak. Speaking of being workshop, we got an email from one of our listeners, Juliana, and they write 10 commandments. Yay. Oh. And they write, way back in the 1900s, when I was a student, my friends and I began an annual tradition of watching and commenting on the 10 commandments, doing very much the same process you two do every week. Of course, we were not armed with an elaborate and Byzantine rating system with the spreadsheet. We did have a great love for the overblown badness that is this extravaganza. Over the years, our snacks for the afternoon of viewing, let's face it, it's the whole Sunday. They become more elaborate, finally peaking with marshmallow peep versions of each character. I still have the peeps. Turns out peeps don't decay. They just become harder and harder over time. Wow, did you know that about peeps?
No, but I would have guessed.
I've never been a big peep person for some reason. I don't enjoy them. Anyway, back to the email. There's in almost every scene of the first hour a tableau of terribly stilted acting and fabulousness that should take your scores to 100 in costumes, entrances, over-the-top performances, and camp. A few highlights. Firstly, John Derek wears a cock ring across his chest and gets whipped by Vincent Price. We notice that. Cedric Hardwick minces, Vincent Price purrs, and Ann Baxter and Yul Brynner flounce, pose, and repeat their lines slowly for hours. They chew them. They take the words out of their mouths like wadded up gum, look at them, shrug, and resume chewing. It's going to be a two old queens blowout. I hope you are prepared. I cannot wait to hear next week's show.
Wow.
So we know when this was sent to. I think the movie is so satisfying to view through an ironic lens precisely because it was meant to be so definitive, so scholarly. Plus, Cecil B. DeMille just pretty much remade his own silent movie, barely bothering to change title cards to dialogue. Anyway, it's so bad, it's great. Hint for me, only one of two interesting things happen after the Exodus, so if you need to fast forward to the end from there, you're fine. And thank you for choosing 10 Commandments for doing this weekly podcast. It is a true treasure I found last year about this time during the lockdown and has been so joyful ever since. Heart, heart, heart. Thank you, Juliana.
Thank you. I love the passion. Lovely. Have you ever done like a themed, like, oh, we're watching this movie and I made a themed snack?
I don't know if I, not a movie, but once for the season finale of one season of Drag Race, I had people over and I made three different flavors of ice cream.
You made one the ice cream?
I did. I used an ice cream maker and I made three different flavors of ice cream. One was for Violet Tchotchke. One was for, what was it?
Like Violet Chunky? Was some sort of like,
no, it was like a blueberry. That was more of like the sorbet.
I see.
Pearl was one of the other ones. So Pearl's was like a stoner thing. It was just like vanilla with a whole lot of candy in it. So it was like a whole lot of munchies.
Sure.
The other one I want to say was like a honey.
Oh, they're more like thematic.
It was thematic for the three finalists.
I used to be so into Pearl, just like as a boy. You know what I mean? Like he was like so it's still maybe for me, maybe the dreamiest.
The trade of this of the series.
Yes, of the total in total. He is like the Danny in New Orleans is to real world as Pearl of whatever season that was.
Yeah. I want to say seven, but I could be wrong. I'm sure someone will correct us. If we get it, let us know. You can email us at twooldqueens@gmail.com.
You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at twooldqueens, twooldqueens. Follow me on Letterboxd where I maintain the current rankings.
Yes. Also, we have merch. So if you want to support the show, if you go over to TeePublic and search for Two Old Queens, there's a lot of fun stuff you can buy, all different sorts of knickknacks and tchotchkes and great fun images. And a percentage of all the profits go to help the Okra Project. So you're not just buying merch, you're helping people out. And also, finally, we have Patreon. It's Two Old Queens, the retirement plan. So it's another episode like this every week in your feed.
But there's like this. There's these.
What's it like this? Not identical to this.
We do. There's like, we'll do franchises.
Yes, exactly.
We'll do whodunits.
Dolly Parton movies.
Thank you.
Cinematic Sondheim, you know.
Thank you.
And we're about to swing into summer with our Spider-Man series.
Oh, I see what you did there.
There you go.
Whip, whip. Whip Side Story.
I love this mashup. Yeah, thank you. Check all that out if you want us to help support the podcast. We really appreciate that.
We'll be back next week. We don't know what the movie is, but
that's okay.
We'll let you know ahead of time.
Exactly.
All right, we'll see you next time. Stay safe, everybody. Goodbye.
Now it's time for credits. We got music by Danny Cohen.
Artwork by Connie Shin.
And special thanks to Alex Arche and Mike Rennie.
Bye.
Goodbye. We didn't get that right.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.